Hi, this is Aspen Grinder. I'm joined with Kitty Degler. Thank you for being here, Kitty.
Hi.
I'm going to read this brief statement and see if you agree, and then we'll kind of get going from there. The Department of Religious Studies at the University of Kansas is conducting a research project that seeks to preserve the history of various churches and other religious organizations in Kansas. We would like to record your experiences in religious organizations. We expect that each interview will take approximately 30 minutes to an hour. We assure you that you are not obligated to participate and may discontinue your involvement at any time. Since we are trying to create a public record of Kansas religious history, we are primarily interested in interviewing persons who agree to let their interviews be available to the general public through a website and to be identified by name as the person who was interviewed. Should you have any questions about the project, please contact Professor Tim Miller, and I can give you his contact information if you'd like. And if you have any questions about your rights as a research participant, you may call the Human Subject Protection Office, and I can provide you with that as well if you'd like. But does that all sound agreeable?
That sounds fine.
All right, great. Well, thank you again for agreeing to meet with me. I always like to just start off by asking a bit about your background, just where you grew up. Some general information about yourself.
Let's see. Well, I'm more an East Coast girl, but I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and then my dad was in sales, and so we moved to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, and Westfield, New Jersey, and Morristown, New Jersey. We were following around Washington's bad winters. And we lived in Morristown for a long time, and then I went to high school in Connecticut and then went to college in Indiana and met my husband there. And when I finished my MBA, we decided to be within 600 miles of each of our parents. So we moved about 600 miles away from my mother. And Sam's family, my husband's family, was here in Kansas City. So that's how I got out here. I grew up in pretty large mainstream Protestant churches. I gather when I was 4 and 5 in Valley Forge that my parents were really active in the beginning of this Methodist church. My dad stayed active when we were in Morristown, and we were at the First Presbyterian Church there, which was really big. It had, well, maybe not as big as some of the mega churches these days, but in that time it was a big church. Yeah. And it had a junior choir, a youth choir, senior choir. And I always was really interested in music. And so so I was pretty active in the choirs there and going to Sunday school and youth group and all that. And high school, college, I had drifted away, and when I moved out to Kansas City, and I think my belief systems were starting to change. I never was really, I always was all interested in alternative theories of spirituality, and so I read Edgar Cayce's biography, There is a River, when I was 12, and thought that that made a whole lot more sense than any of the, I don't know, Christian, standard Christian doctrine that I knew. So when I was confirmed in the Presbyterian Church, I was already rebellious in terms of, we had to say the Apostles' Creed, and I remember thinking, okay, I'm saying this, but here's how I'm meaning this. You know, the only
kind of
way.
Your own interpretation.
Yes,
yeah.
You know, so And then when we moved out to Kansas City, my stepdad said, well, you know, Unity is something you might be interested in. And I looked at the church ads for weeks and weeks, and finally one, it may have been the Sunday after Easter, tried it. And it was like, oh, wow, this is Christianity that really speaks to me. So I was there at the big Unity Temple of the Plaza Church for quite a while. We live in Kansas, in Overland Park. And was on the board of directors and active in their choir. But gradually, I wanted to hear more about the Divine Feminine. And then the Unity Church would have lots of speakers from alternative paths in.
Mm-hmm. So that wasn't something that you had really experienced before?
Well,
in that sort of setting, at least.
In a way. I mean, I had read... I mean, I knew astrology and palmistry and numerology and all those occult sciences from a young person. I mean, my mom had Horoscope magazine in the bathroom, so that's what I was reading. So I was always really interested in those. And I even, at some point, maybe in college, had Starhawk's book, Spiral Dance, and I'd read some of it, and it didn't quite feel right. And I had some other witchcraft book. I was, there was some book club, you know, where you could order books each month, and it was, you know, so I would be
like a scholastic book club type of thing.
Yeah, but this was more like a cult book club. So, and I still have some of those books, and at least one of them is about witchcraft, but it was very, I don't know, formulaic and didn't speak to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in between that, I continued reading a lot of science fiction and fantasy books, and you often find that there are different belief systems in those, and particularly some where a goddess is one of the primary deities that's worshipped. And that started, those sorts of things started to speak more and more to me. Sometime in the late 80s, early 90s, Unity had a shaman come and did some workshops in shamanic journeying,
mm-hmm.
and I really connected with those. It was a way to find an altered state that really seemed to work, and I would come back with answers or insights, and it's like, I have no idea where that came from, because it didn't really relate to anything in my normal existence, which to me said that there was something to it. So I did lots and lots of reading, and I had, we finally adopted a daughter, and by the time we had her christening, we did a very pagan christening, not in a, you know, honoring elements and honoring directions and nature spirits and things like that, but it wasn't anything particularly of a specific path tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, every so often I go back in my mind, it's like, how did I get here? and then in 1995, my best friend, who was studying to be a Unity minister, said, Kitty, Starhawk is coming to this witch camp in Salem, Missouri. And I'm like, oh, really? So we went. And Starhawk is part of the reclaiming tradition of Wicca, which has a lot of social justice in it, and is fairly eclectic, and they do a lot of trance work, a lot of psychological work. And that really, really spoke to me. So for a week, I was immersed out in this beautiful piece of land called Diana's Grove that was on Sinking Creek, which flows into the current river in a part of the Missouri Ozarks that was already my favorite part of Missouri, because we would canoe there. And at that witch camp, I met some other Kansas City pagans, including one named Mickey Combs, who was studying to be a Unitarian Universalist minister.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you pretty familiar with the Unitarian Universalist Church?
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew there was one in Kansas City, but
mm-hmm.
I'd grown up Unity,
mm-hmm.
Or not grown up, but I'd been involved in
mm-hmm.
in Unity. And we joined together with a few other people into a coven when we got back to Kansas City. It was Blue Flame Coven. And would meet once a month, mostly at the full moon, a group of women And I had taken some other witchcraft course before that, which, again, didn't quite speak to me. It was very formulaic, whereas reclaiming tradition is very participatory. So when you go, it's not just watching somebody do something. It's you're involved as well, either in singing or in actions or that would... you know, let yourself be open to the powers of spirit or fire. Mm-hmm.
So you're not just
whatever.
A spectator.
Right. Yeah. And the workshops would really... I mean, I got lots of insights out of it, and that seemed really worthwhile. So we formed this coven, and in 94. So this was, my daughter was 11 months old when I went down to the first witch camp in 95. And so Vicky and I were sitting around, I know the exact day because it was the night that Ellen DeGeneres was coming out on TV.
Big moment.
Yes, yeah. And so, and the coven had both straight and lesbian members in it, so it was a big thing. But we were sitting on the couch drinking wine, and Vicky was talking about, she was working with the Kansas City Food Circle, and was, you know, trying to figure out a way to do ministry as well as her food circle work. And the food circle would work with farmers and community gardens and trying to get people to get closer to the source of their food. And she also wanted to do ministry, and I said, well, why can't you do both? You know, we could start a pagan church, because I really wanted a church like the ones that I grew up in, something that was stable, that wasn't, that seemed to have normal people in it. Mm-hmm. Not just, I mean, at that time, a lot of Wiccans used, you know, this is Lady Butterfly or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's, but, you know, there were a lot of aliases because there was a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you think in the Midwest more so than other places in the U.S. or?
You know, I don't have a way to judge that because yeah. I've been, you know, by that time I'd lived in Kansas City for, this was... I've been here for 12 years, and in my view, Kansas City Metro is a pretty open place.
Yeah.
And I had worked for Hallmark, and my husband had been out here at KU for a while, and then he was, by that time, I think he was working for Lockton Insurance. So, and our... you know, we would go to the plays and the symphonies, and the art scene there was vibrant. And so it never felt stifling. And my daughter was attending Montessori schools, so they tend to attract more open-minded teachers and more open-minded parents. So in my social... connections, most everybody was pretty open and liberal. Mm-hmm. But I wanted something that was stable, that would have like a Sunday school for kids. And at that time, and maybe still for some, but less so now, there was a lot of pagans, Wiccans were really uncomfortable with Sunday school for their kids because they themselves had been so indoctrinated that they didn't want that for their children. Whereas I'm coming from, well, I never felt indoctrinated. I mean, I had the I mean, in third grade, I had a Princeton Seminary student as my Sunday school teacher. And he's bringing on articles from Reader's Digest about how the plagues in Egypt could have been caused by the aftermath of a volcano or so, something like that, and the tsunami and all this. You know, so I never felt like my brain was shut down by my religion. And if I didn't like what I heard, I just ignored it or changed it around. Yeah, I mean, I would wrestle with some of it, I guess I was fairly independent in my thinking, and mainstream Protestant churches were not dogmatic, like some of the fundamentalist churches that are out here and probably there now too. So anyway, but I wanted Sunday school at a regular church, and so that was kind of the start of it. And Vicky and I spent a lot of time. First, we were looking for a building or land, and we finally realized that to start a church, you have to have people. And she felt that the Unitarian Universalist denomination would help support the startup of a theme church, because they'd done it in some other places, not necessarily for pagan, but for, I think, one church that was much more Christian. And by that time, Unitarian Universalism was pretty open, various congregations at various levels of focus either on social justice or a more spiritual focus, maybe. So we kept talking, and then got, you know, had, Vicky had lots of contacts. She was very good in that area.
Good person to know, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, you know, she'd probably make a good politician, in a way. But, so we got people who had expressed interest from All Souls. All Souls, or Unitarian Universalism, had a very popular course called Cakes for the Queen of Heaven, which was focused on goddess spirituality. And so she knew people who had taken that course. And so we started meeting. And that was in 97, I think. We were also going through a personal development priestess training program through Diana's Grove, which was the retreat center that had hosted the Reclaiming Witch Camp. And that was really powerful work to be doing in terms of, I don't know, clearing out the cobwebs of your personality, sort of thing. And we hadn't been meeting that many months. We'd meet about every 2 weeks or so. And at the same time, trying to be figuring out what we wanted to be, how we were going to do it. And there was a blessing, I think. The Missouri River had just been named one of the most endangered rivers in the country, and there was going to be a river blessing at the confluence of the Kansas and Missouri rivers, and Gaia community participated in that. And so that was the first time we really did something publicly. And after that, it was like, well, we're kind of out, so let's do it. And Vicky and I went to new congregation organizer training in Boston that was on the Unitarian Universalist Association's dime. And that, you know, in terms of how to start a church and what you needed to do. And so we kept meeting. And the goal was to have Vicky as a paid minister. And we got grants, both from the Prairie Star District and the Maine Unitarian Universalist office to help fund that, because one thing when you're starting a church is you need money.
It's one of those things.
and we chartered the church. So the first official meeting was like July something in 1997, and then we chartered the church in Beltane, May 2nd or 3rd. in 1999. And we probably had about 50 charter members. We hosted the Beltane out in Southmoreland Park, where the Shakespeare Festival does their plays. And the first year went okay. We had always had lots of people participating, so that rituals, which would be like Sunday services, were planned by teams of people, and we had an excellence in ritual training course that we put them through. And so when we had most times when you have a minister, the main thing the minister does is prepare Sunday service and preaches every Sunday. Well, that wasn't what we did.
Mm-hmm.
So, and eventually, as you know, the grant money went down like it's supposed to, and we didn't quite grow as fast as we had hoped. And we were meeting at All Souls, UU Church. And we got to the point where it became obvious that we weren't going to be able to fund Vicky's salary at the level of salary that the UUA required for its ministers, which was like $49,000 a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually, so we had to let Vicky go, which was sad. But we kind of restructured and survived and continue to operate to this day.
Mm-hmm.
We moved. I wish I kept all these dates. I think it was 2003,
mm-hmm.
maybe, that we moved to Shawnee Mission UU Church and actually rented space from them. The UU All Souls had kind of let us meet there for free, and they were doing some reconstruction and other things, so it made sense to move. And so we stayed at Shawnee Mission UU Church for quite a few years, maybe 9 or 10. And we still continued to meet every Sunday, either for a ritual or a class or a workshop. I started a choir called Voices of Gaia that was meeting pretty strongly for a while, and then I got kind of tired and other people got tired, and so let it fade away for a while, but we're back again.
Mm. That's good news.
I have members that nag at me. When are we meeting again? Okay. Because it's a lot of work. I mean, I was spending time today working on some music for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was my other goal, was to have pagan choirs, you know, singing music that honored the earth.
Were the recitals just at the meeting place, or would you?
Well, most times we would sing during a service.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then sometimes we do an entire service, particularly Yule was big. And then one time we did Gaia the Musical, which was about...
Did you write that?
Well, I put it together
yeah.
with a lot of songs from that existed. And then I've written a bunch of chants as well as some songs, which I never had done before getting involved in earth-based spirituality. And eventually it felt that I was coming home to the things that always were really, really important to me. Because I'd been active in Sierra Club in college, and in New Jersey we lived on the side of a hill, and because of problems with septic tanks, that the street that was supposed to curve down around the side of the mountain and hook up with the other end of the subdivision was never built. So there was this whole mountainside of forest. And there was evidence of earlier roads there, and there's a good chance that some of Washington's troops had camped there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would regularly disappear into those woods and spend long hours, found a creek, you know,
mm-hmm.
reroute the creek. So being out in nature was really something for me. I mean, something that really spoke to me. And then getting, and so now my religion is more that. And so if I need to say a prayer or a blessing or honor the spirits, that's pretty easy because they kind of
mm-hmm.
sing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, I never would have imagined, like when in Christianity,
mm-hmm.
none of that spoke to me, like, you know, looking at a tree
mm-hmm.
or a sunset or walking through a field even. And I've been regularly blessed with having, we live right next to Indian Creek Trail, and for 30 years, the field that was supposed to become developed was not. And so a farmer would plant it with wheat or soybeans. So I got to watch an agricultural cycle year after year after year, right as I'm driving out the subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, let's see. So Gaia Community, about 3 years ago, took the money we'd accumulated and bought a share of a building on Troost. It was in not the best shape.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the first summer there was no air conditioning.
That's rough.
Yes. And because it was right on Troost, for a number of reasons. One, so we, Shawnee Mission U Church was selling their building and moving further west
mm-hmm.
to like 95th and Flum. Now for me, where I live, which is near Johnson County Community College, that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we go this way, we go that way. But for a lot of people, that was more west than it wanted to be. Because
mm-hmm.
Gaia Community has people from all over the Kansas City metro, from north, from east, from south,
mm-hmm.
out west as well. So
when you were meeting at Shawnee Mission, about how many members would attend regularly?
Well, probably 30,
mm-hmm.
I would say. And always a lot of new families. Now, one of the things that happens over the period of, because we'll be 20 years old next year,
mm-hmm. yeah,
to the first public event, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughter's now 22,
mm-hmm.
and like a lot of teens, she's, or 20s, you know, she's involved in her life with college and working and all, and so church is not something she's interested in, and she doesn't exactly know what she believes or
mm-hmm.
if she cares that much,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay. But when she was there, there was a whole group of kids that went to Sunday school together.
Mm-hmm.
We might have 12, 15 kids in Sunday school. They
mm-hmm.
had something called Gaia Girls, and they would do campouts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would. I remember going up to Wallace State Park, maybe, camping
mm-hmm.
at night. We did some lessons about Egyptian spirituality in the Nile River, I recall,
mm-hmm.
by the lake. And we don't have as many kids now. So, with being on Troost and a neighborhood that's not as white suburban,
mm-hmm.
we lost some people. And because our building was really a mess, we didn't do as much advertising because you really didn't. It took a certain kind of person to be able to come there and
mm-hmm.
see the vision that was possible. But this past year, the other co-owner has put in lots of funds and the bill and has brought in another partner, and so now things are looking lovely, and we're in a mindset now to try and make people more aware of our presence and all. I'm just amazed that something that was really my idea still exists, and I personally have not been on the board of directors of Gaia Community for 15 years, maybe 10 years, a long time. You know, so other people picked up the vision. And
do you think it's evolved much through the years, or do you think it stayed pretty true to what your original idea was?
In many ways, the biggest change occurred when we did, well, first we had done a year with the kids of looking at different pantheons, Native American, Egyptian, Druid, I think, but, and the next year we did the same thing with the adults. And so we picked, I guess, 8 different traditions and to focus on. So we did traditional Wicca, we did Druidry, Egyptian, I think we did Hellenic, we did Polynesian or Hawaiian. We did kind of eclectic Wicca, which is what Gaia Community really was. We did a Slovakian thing. There may be one other. And for 6 weeks from a period of between the high holidays, so between like spring equinox and Beltane, all the rituals were the classes and all the rituals focused on that style, and they would be done in that tradition. And for me, who had only really done Wiccan ritual, I never realized that there was something else, or that people would do things in such a different way. And that was really, so that was, it was eye-opening for me. And it also brought more traditions into the community. So now when you go to Gaia Community, if you go to a ritual, it may be in a Druid style, or it could be in our more Gaia standard style, which is what we teach in our Excellence in Ritual class, which is now, I mean, it has, how many weeks does that class left? We used to do it over a weekend. It's like 8 weeks of class. There are written assignments. There's a notebook. And there's also an internship afterwards too. So they are really well trained when they come out. And then experienced ritualists will mentor them as well. Gosh, where was I? Someplace before that.
Talking about how it's evolved.
Oh, or? Yeah. So that,
so it sounds like it's become more diverse in it.
Right. Yeah. And so this, one of the things that happened during that year was we learned that Egyptian cities, or an Egyptian city, the temples in it would compete to be the patron deity of the year. And that was both an honor and a responsibility. So we had our first god auction that year as a fundraiser, and at that point it was all different Egyptian deities. I'm not sure who won. I don't know if we had I think we had Hathor and Thoth and Osiris and somebody else. And we structured it as a fundraiser, and people could donate either cash or food for harvesters. And it was in the middle of the summer. And we've been doing that ever since. And it's like one of the best fundraisers around. There are certain questions, you know, what, you know, as a deity, would you bring Gaia community? And we have different ritual team members aspect or be that, play the part of that deity. And they've done research and studying and costuming, and they've set up like a stage. It's quite an event.
Mm-hmm.
and that has continued every year since. And now we have a penny auction. Well, first, now the process is there's nominations, and then there's a penny auction to where everybody puts their coins in to see, and then the top, it had been four, but we've narrowed it down to three, partially because of space, and the congregation has gotten a little smaller. Three candidates, and then often prior to the God auction itself, there's a class where various supporters get to make pitches about, you know, we talk.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's during the penny auction, where people come and they talk about the various deities that they've nominated and why you would want to have this patron. So this year our patron is Dionysus, which was, it kind of, we had, who was running? We had Dionysus. Can you don't remember. It was just, it was just in July. Hermes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Hermes. Hermes and Freyr. So three men, and last year it was Bridget, which was a repeat. So what ended up happening is Freyr and Hermes are fairly solid, straight-laced, maybe. Not straight-laced, not so much, but deities. And Dionysus was a wild card.
Mm-hmm.
The people who wanted something a little more conservative split their votes between Freyr and Hermes, and Dionysus won, which was really a surprise. But we've been having lots of fun with it, so we've been doing much more ecstatic ritual. There's more dancing, there's more drumming. So this year for Yule, I think we're going to do a Saturnalia, which would be more based on Roman tradition than the normal European Celtic style.
Do you have about the same number of members now as you did when you were at Shawnee Mission?
No, we have less.
Mm-hmm.
But
just because of the change in location?
Yeah, I think so. And, I mean, there were people that were like, I am never going to Troost.
Mm-hmm.
But we had really, Vicky Combs was very much into urban justice, and so in many ways we're close, a little closer to our roots there.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to figure out how to be in the neighborhood, I mean, we heard that there were neighbors that didn't think weren't very excited at all about having pagans there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we haven't had any incidents or anything.
Mm-hmm.
We've just heard some talk.
Mm-hmm.
We're around a campfire.
Yeah.
And we don't really have any green space there, because if we did, we would be having outdoor bonfires, because we really love to do that. But the level of activity is, it feels like we're feeling more confident. We are, proud of the building now. The new partner is Heart of the Dove, and so they've taken over management of the building, and they're doing First Friday events, and are having other more new age kind of healers or speakers come in and do events, and so there's space, both event space and office space, for rent in the building, and hopefully that will get us on a more, not Gaia community, but the building on a more stable financial footing. We had gotten a loan to do to insulate the building and put new furnace and air conditioners in. And the insulation must be really good because we are paying less for that building than for my house. though we also, you know, if the building's not being used, we keep the temperature low in the winter and the air conditioning temperature high in the summer. So we have, so right now, the Guy community will have a games night, which would have been last night, where anybody can come. I think the only rule is that you can't talk Gaia official business. We operate by consensus, which was when we were in the process of making our bylaws and prior to chartering as a congregation, we did a number of classes in consensus to come to a decision of whether that's the way we want to operate. And and that was the vote. So there's a committee of the whole that meets once a month. There is a board of directors, and we have to have a quorum of the board of directors at a committee of the whole meeting for things to be official. But anybody can come to those meetings, including not being a member. You just can't block consensus. And I've been really proud of how, over the years, we have, we've dealt with different problems that come up in any churches, including, you know, difficult personalities and, you know, hurt feelings and stuff like that. And almost always what we've done is improved our process to try and be inclusive and so people get heard. And and I'm, you know, just really proud of the way it's worked. And, you know, the whole consensus idea didn't come from me because I didn't know anything about consensus when I started, but it came from other people who were familiar. So we're regularly bringing in, you know, people come with new ideas and those ideas get incorporated into the church's governance or into its activities. We very much are into personal responsibility, you know, so if somebody comes and says, well, you really should do this, and it's like, yeah, would you like to, you know, would you like to do that? And so, and that also means that when we have fewer people, we, you know, concentrate on what we feel like the core activities are, and when there are more people, then more things can happen. So right now we've got a storytelling group that is meeting pretty regularly and perfecting their skills as storytellers and writing stories and that sort of thing. Because we use a lot of story in ritual. It is good for teaching, as even Jesus knew. Excuse me. We have a social justice committee and typically a focus on between the high holidays. We'll have a focus on one thing or another. It also might relate to our patron. I know 2 years ago we had Danu as our patron for the year, and so we did a lot of things related to water and rivers. Focused on that. We still collect for harvesters every Sunday. We participate in the Blue River cleanup almost every year. There may have been 1 year recently that we didn't have enough to go, but that's a kind of traditional activity. And we just sent a very large Lowe's gift card up to, well, not very large, large for us. It was like $328 gift card up to the Standing Rock. No DAPL pipeline protest or protectors up there. When there was a Hindu temple that was defaced or something some years back, and I think we sent something to them. Mm-hmm. Not that they needed it.
Where was this?
This was in, I think it was in Overland Park.
Oh, okay.
We have a website and we have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So, and there are 300 some people on our Facebook page. So I sometimes feel like, and a lot of Kansas City Pagans may have come and been active with us for a while and they've moved away to something else. I sort of feel like we're everybody's pagan church.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's not accurate, but that if they need a funeral or something and they don't have their own resources, they'll come to us.
Mm-hmm.
We also went through a process to kind of ordain some of us to be able to do weddings,
mm-hmm.
Because that has a state ramification. So so I actually got to lead a wedding for someone. That was really cool.
Well, that's cool.
It's kind of like on my bucket list of things to do. And so we'll get calls, mm-hmm. for that. We just had did a memorial service for a member who had... He'd been active for a while and then had, I think, remarried and hadn't been so active, but he passed away. And so we just did a memorial service for him. And my choir sang. It was nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see, what else do we do? We still have kids' space. We just don't have as many kids in it. That's what we call our Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
But we should be working on doing more outreach and getting more, because families with children often are really the heart of your church. They certainly were for us. Mm-hmm. We don't have as many now as we did because they've grown up. The families have stayed, but the, mm-hmm. the kids are now in their teens or 20s.
The last thing I was wondering about is, I mean, when you told your family, you know, maybe Protestant Christianity isn't my thing, did that go over fine? Or was it really a big conversation? Or?
Well, I think my mother gave up on me a long time ago. But see, my dad was the one who was really active in churches.
Mm-hmm.
My mother would occasionally go. He passed away when I was 17. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't been in the picture. I think, you know, for a while my family thought I was kind of nuts. But, you know, my mother voted for Trump. We have so many issues between us that...
Mm-hmm.
Religion is just
awful. Just one of them. just one source of,
yeah, it's difference. Like,
yeah.
We can barely talk about the weather because, mm-hmm. I might bring up global warming. You know?
Oh, no.
You know?
Yeah, that's to...
And my husband's family is pretty tolerant. Mm-hmm. He grew up Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
But in a mainstream Baptist congregation. Mm-hmm. So when the Baptists went all fundamentalists, the church that he went to eventually pulled out of that, is it the Missouri Synod or something?
Mm-hmm.
And he's much more a philosopher than, so he doesn't, I've dragged him to a few things here and there, but mm-hmm. generally he doesn't attend. I occasionally could get him to a potluck, but religion just isn't his thing. So I think they've gotten used to my craziness, and it's been 20 years now that, mm-hmm. I've been. They were okay with unity. And it was my mother reading horoscope magazines, you know.
So. Mm, yeah, she's not blameless in the whole matter.
So, for a while, particularly at the beginning, I was very much... I mean, we were putting articles in the newspaper, and And we invited Margot Adler. And so we had this big event back in 1998. Or no, maybe it was 97. Anyway, we had 200 people at All Souls come to hear Margot speak. And so that was probably the biggest thing we ever did. But we've also done some classes, workshops at like the when the Unitarian Universalists had its General Assembly in Nashville. I know I did gave one workshop. I may have been on storytelling. I'm trying to remember what I did. But and then we also led the ritual for the Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans. Mm-hmm. So in many Unitarian Universalist churches, there are like chapters of cups, as it's known. Mm-hmm. And in 2001, we were headed out to Boulder to do the ritual at the cups kind of conference there. And we'd been preparing for some weeks, and 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the team doing it got together within a few days' time and said, we got to do something different.
Yeah.
And we did, you know, and changed it all around what we were doing. And that was a really pretty powerful ritual of healing to after that event. Mostly healing for ourselves, but also sending out healing to the rest of the planet. So that was pretty cool. And so we've often, I think when the General Assembly was in St. Louis, our group went and either helped or did the ritual. I couldn't go that time for whatever reason, but others did and represented us well. We have some really smart people in the congregation. Very, you know, knowledgeable, and they study and so like I used to teach excellence in ritual, and I don't do that anymore. There are other people doing that. It's really wonderful, and for some people, we meet every Sunday, and for a Sunday ritual, we. An hour and a half to 2 hours is 2 hours at the max. Run over 2 hours, you messed up. But within that time, there are limits as to how much you can do compared to if you've gone to, you know, a retreat center for an entire weekend. And so sometimes we'll get complaints from experienced pagans that, you know, we're not going deep enough. It's like, well, we never know. We are open. And that was a really big thing. To be open, to invite anybody to come, to publicize our meetings in the newspaper, which we don't do anymore because using social media seems to be more effective.
Yeah, it speeds up the process for sure.
So we probably get fewer, there might be less general awareness of our existence, but if a pagan's looking for, if you're looking for pagan in Kansas City, we pretty much come up, I think we come up on the first page of the search engine, I hope so. and we're active, we have members that are active in the Interfaith Council as well. So we're trying to act, to be a good member of the religious community. And to, you know, make other religions aware of, you know, that we don't eat babies and, you know, kill animals. kind of thing. And I don't hear much of that anymore, but it could be that I actually avoid listening to things that would upset me because it's not worth it.
Best to stay off of Facebook.
Well, I shouldn't say. I mean, I don't go looking for listening to fundamentalist preachers because it's like, what's the point? Whereas my husband is much better, or I don't know, better he subjects himself to this, and I'm regularly going, why?
Just out of interest.
This stuff. I think because he wants to know what else is going on.
Yeah.
But.
not for everyone.
I think he just lets his YouTube suggested videos play.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll get into some really weird stuff. But anyway, so. And I find that that my level of, what am I going to say? Like what I actually believe really is pretty amorphous in term. Because I, you know, is something real? Is a deity real? It's hard for me to say. So it's much more now that there was one teacher I had in a workshop who said that she believed in energy. And I've really come, I think that's kind of where I am at as well. So we're honoring Dionysus. And I do have the belief that if our thoughts and energies and all is directed in that way, that something responds. I don't exactly know what that is. And I certainly have the sense that, I mean, I do believe that the trees and even rocks and places have an energy to them. Mm-hmm. Is that a spirit? I don't know, but you can, I mean, I think you can touch a tree. I mean, scientists, I think, know that trees talk to each other through chemicals in their roots and all.
Mm-hmm.
So I find all that fairly magical, and I'm willing to work with it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I used to be very confident that we have souls, but now I'm not so, you know, and that there was some sort of reincarnation or whatever, and now I don't know, maybe. Mm-hmm. And maybe we just die, and so it's really important to make a positive impact while you're living. As much as you can. And the rest will take care of itself somehow. Anyway, that's, I don't know what else to say.
any final thoughts or anything else you'd like to share?
You know, so Gaia Community really, I know this is for Kansas, but, and so Gaia Community was founded in Missouri by a Kansan and a Missourian, and met in Kansas for a long time. And we have lots of members that are from Kansas. So we definitely have a Kansas connection. And we've also helped congregations get start. There was a Unitarian church in Texas that changed to being a pagan congregation. So we try and help other congregations get started, and occasionally, I mean, we have 20 years of rituals.
Mm-hmm.
They're all supposed to be on a certain wiki, and we haven't uploaded them all, but they ought to be out there. And so we have lots of experience doing that on all. Probably so. We're as experienced as almost any other pagans in the country or the world, I would say.
Yeah.
At least in what we do. So you could stop by sometime.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Tomorrow we're doing a ritual in song, which we've done. I got asked to help a member of All Souls do a singing meditation ritual. There's actually a book. And so we led that, or I led that with her help and some Gaia members who came. And so then we pulled that into doing them at Gaia Community.
Mm-hmm.
And so tomorrow, I think, is We Honor the Earth, and is the title.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be pretty much all in song with a few words here and there, mostly sung by the participants, and I teach all these songs, and some they'll know. And then the next high holiday is Yule, which is this whatever Sunday is before Christmas. Or before the winter solstice.
Yeah.
More exactly. Anyway, we have a schedule and a calendar. So out of the Gaia's website, which is GaiaCommunity.org, there's a calendar, and then if you're in the Facebook group, you'll regularly get updates of things that are going on. But we're a friendly group. Anyway, so that's all I can think of.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed talking with you. Thanks for your contribution to the project.
Well, you're welcome. If somebody has other questions, I'm happy to try and answer them. And I can go back in our archives and get more specific dates if anybody really wants.
Kept your records.
Yes, if anyone really wants that sort of level of detail.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's been fun. How late's the library?
I
haven't heard.